Welcome once again to Strain Talk. This is your co-host, Nick McCombs, along with Mike Morris on the Millennium Grown Broadcast Network. Thank you for joining us once again. Been about a week since you heard from us, and we are glad that you're tuning in again. Going to go ahead and give a shout-out to Cannabis Connection. They were very kind to us in our launch party. And I'm going to go ahead and see if our co-host, Mike, is on the line. Mike, are you there?
I hope so. Am I coming through?
Yes, you are.
Ah, awesome.
Awesome. Well, thank you once again for tuning in and hosting this with us. How's your week been?
Thanks for having me. My weekend, it was rather busy, but it was a good weekend, all in all.
Nice. I guess we'll kick right into it. I think we're going to – I'm broadcasting today from the actual studio. Hopefully you'll get to lay your eyes on it. It's pretty amazing how far Amy's been able to bring us in just a week. So it's going
to
be very,
nice.
Very fun
excited.
Ride that we're going on.
It is for sure.
So I think we're going to try and be a little bit more formatted, thanks to in large part to you. And we're going to go ahead and start off with a strain of the week from each one of us. Had you had a strain that you wanted to discuss this week?
Yeah, I will, definitely.
We're live.
Yes.
Yeah, go ahead. So what strain was it that you wanted to talk about?
Oh, okay, I can go first. I would probably go with one that I've been sort of standing by for quite a while now, and that is Headband, which is a pretty unique strain, very, very potent, and but very, you know, the terpene profile on Headband is really interesting, really good. I actually prefer it to use in THC more than anything, so... But it's a great strain for sleep, I found. So it's my bedtime strain. So if anybody's looking for a bedtime strain, it's definitely one to look out for, and that's Headband. It grew very nicely. I grew it myself, and it's really got an interesting mix of like, it's like a very lemony sour diesel almost. So it's got some really cool hints of many different things. So linalool's pretty high in there, which is like lavender, but then it has your more diesel notes to it, and then it also has a little bit of lemon in it. You know, so it's a really nice strain. I really enjoy it for the evening. So it might be a good choice for somebody who's trying to get more CBN. They can use Headband very well to express more CBN and to help add to the nighttime and sort of pain-relieving effects of it both.
Interesting. Yeah, the best representation of that strain that I've seen definitely is like a lemony diesel, like you described.
Yeah.
What's the lineage on that as far as you understand?
This one is mostly a Kush dominant. So.
Right, yeah, that's what I've always heard, that it was... tied back to some of the early Kush crosses, like did yours come with the donation of the 818 headband or anything like that?
No, it was given to me as like your really sort of original, you know, headband before, you know, there's certain definitely other phenos out there of headband that express differently, but this is a pretty straightforward, almost just sour Kush. So sour diesel in OG, so. And I just, for some reason, I'm really responding better to the effects of sours mixed with heavy indicas. So it adds
a nice
mellow effect.
You mentioned it being a good source of CBN. Now, is that something that you need to pick up in the curing process or letting it grow a little bit longer? Or does it have a high CBN content throughout growth?
No, the CBN definitely comes later. I really like to harvest my plants slightly early, actually. And the reason being is that if I make keef or water hash, which is usually my beginning of all my oils, is that I can spread them out, and I can spread them out thin, and I can let them go through the natural degradation process by exposing them to UV light and oxygen, just basic airflow, much like you'd see in a plant that you harvested very late. So you can see, like, you know how when people harvest, some people like cloudy or milky trichomes, some people like them a little bit amber. Well, that amber is actually CBN getting in there. And you'll notice it always on your top colas. Your top colas are going to be heavier in that. So I don't really go for a further degradation process on the very tops. So, and also sugar leaf. The cannabinoids ripen a little faster on the sugar leaves. So, you know, it's a great way, you know, to use your trim for something a little interesting and a little bit different. So,
oh yeah,
really,
that's a great point.
In order to get a lot of CBN, you need a lot of THC. But CBN is only 10% as psychoactive as THC. So you get, you know, you still get a lot of the better. So you get it almost knocks down a little bit of the psychoactivity and adds a little bit more to the body effects, because it really hits CB2 receptors good.
Right. Yeah, I had recently got just a small sample of some CBN that had been processed from industrial hemp plants being, I believe, exposed to heat. I'm not sure the exact process, but a little bit of it went a long way as far as sedation and just relaxation. They were actually using it to wean people from heavy narcotic pharmaceuticals. So I think that's like, that might be the next big thing to break, might be CBN, because to break all these people from their Oxycontin addictions and such.
That's, in fact, that's actually what, you know, what I've thought, you know, for the last couple of years is, you know, once I started being able to learn how to express it more through extraction and decarb oxalation, harvest window, the whole thing, you know, is that it's very anticonvulsant, even though it's very sedating. And really, it doesn't take much, you know. So there's ways to push it pretty high, you know, by using decarboxylation and airflow, you know. But sometimes, you know, even you figure most cannabis strains are harvested at, you know, barely 0.5%, you know, CBN. So, you know, and you can even feel that in a strain. So really, you know, even if you're hitting, you know, 3-4% on CBN is a good dose.
Right, yeah, that's something that those receptors don't get very often, so it goes a long way.
Yeah, definitely.
So I guess I'll kind of let that lead into my strain of the week, which is a strain I'm real familiar with, yet it's still a mystery to me, and allow that kind of reach us through some other subjects today, and that strain would be R4, commonly known or suspected to be also called Charlotte's Web, I'll say. It's the strain that kind of pushed the whole CBD, cannabis for children movement into the spotlight with the Sanjay Gupta show on CNN there. It's a strain that at the time was thought to be unique, but through whatever parallel thought or parallel intentions through the universe, you know, there's been AC/DC and Avadacal and Haley's Hope and just a number of other ones that have a similar trait, being where the trichomes contain an abundance of CBD and very minuscule amount of THC, and which actually allows it to be grown, thankfully, as industrial or medical hemp.
Right.
It's a strain that I myself bought into the CBD hype a little bit for the first year of it, being having it under my thumb and growing it and just being able to know what its effects were and everything. I thought that it was the miracle cure-all plant until, you know, just a little bit more research found out that you do need all these broad-spectrum cannabinoids to work in synergy, and for many, many ailments, the CBD is not going to provide for you alone what you need.
Right.
But it still is a wonderful strain, and I think it's kind of becoming the backbone of a lot of people's breeding projects now that it's finally kind of loosened up and got free into the cannabis community. So I think it'll serve its purpose in being a mixture into a lot of CBD strains in the future.
Definitely, definitely. Out of curiosity, are your leaves still variegated when you grow it?
Yeah, because of that strain and also G13 being variegated, I started collecting variegated strains, actually. And a few
of them
I've been able to coax out of it a little bit with just heavy feeding and application of aminos. But R4 and G13 are two that it seems like it's hardwired into them. And they're, even though I've heard that G13 didn't have it initially.
See, I've seen it on basically strains being too far different from each other to really work together, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But through stabilization, sometimes they can lose that trait. But I find it interesting when there's strains that just do it all the time. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I have that. I have the white does that for me. A cut of Chem D that also does that. And then two or three others that used to, but do not any longer. I wanted to kind of make that my strain of the week because I also wanted to touch on some of the law aspects that are going on around the country. It's kind of an attack on the medical community to bring about a corporate recreational cannabis, so it would seem, in they're doing it state by state, market by market. And I know you spent part of your weekend actually doing some research on the law changes that they pushed through in California. Can you kind of tell us what you know about that and what how you see that going across the other states in the country?
Yeah, actually, what made me so interested in what was going on in California is obviously their huge impact on the country's medical cannabis program. You know, a lot of what we do, California has led the way, and so, it sets a precedent for other states when bills aren't really thought through for the patient. And that's kind of the trend that is. You know, it's very biased and, who gets what, who doesn't. You know, very strict penalties, very strict regulations. And the main thing that is tough, it's a lot of like what's going on in Ohio, is the problem is that, we're already growing and treating ourselves with a federally illegal substance. And so the last thing we need is the states to impose more regulations on it. I mean, you can't get more regulated than a Schedule I substance. So, it's kind of like we need to sort of help, we need to work with the doctors, we need to work with the community and the legislators, but really we need a lot more doctor support, I think, because they're really even sort of trying to crack down on doctors writing prescriptions for it and stuff in California, which is going to hurt a lot of people. You know, some people will benefit, but there will be people hurt.
Right. And that language was real vague. If I remember, it was something like if you wrote an inordinate amount of cannabis recommendations or something like that, your license would be taken away from you.
And there's absolutely no statute as to how many that is. Are you allowed 10 a year? Are you allowed 5 a year? What constitutes excessive? And that's another sort of gray area. And it invites, I think they have probably 20 or more state agencies out there that are collecting data of where the growers live. They're fingerprinting, they're collecting a huge database of patient information, which is very, very close to violating HIPAA rules and things like that. So, it's definitely a trend that I'm not seeing as going very far, benefiting enough people.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought up HIPAA because that is something that the advocates and patients that had been lobbying here in Colorado had been standing by. And right on the Senate floor, they had said that HIPAA does not apply because it's federally illegal. So they're just using the federal illegality to skirt all those sorts of laws. You know,
right.
It's very shady.
That's even shadier than, you know, that's even shadier than I thought. You know, I didn't think about it that way. You know, it's tough. It's a tough situation, you know, and it's just
it really requires
a heads up, you know, for everybody, you know, whether you're very new into cannabis or whether you've been at it for a while, you know, is how are we going to make this work nationwide? You know, and what is the best way to go about it? Because if we keep allowing the lawmakers to make the laws, you know, it's, you know, this is what's going to happen, unfortunately. So,
yeah, I couldn't agree more.
And
I think,
like to,
I'm sorry, you definitely like
definitely
to what?
I would definitely like to see more physician support for it, you know, but, you know, obviously their hands are tied, you know, as, you know, they have to follow the FDA. So, you know, it's tricky. We have a long, long, long way to go.
Yeah, I would like to see a way to get some physicians more involved as well. Like you say, it seems like they might have the most to lose. However, it is a threat to many of their livelihood, especially with these laws like your state in California. I think we both are pushing for awareness, and I think that will be a big part of this show in the future, is making sure people are aware in their local areas. Well, please send us anything that we should be aware of, and we'll broadcast anything that we are aware of. A thing that I would like to push for everybody, a lot of transplants here that came to Colorado for cannabis, that's great. You should do your part now and make sure that you're registered to vote and make sure that you are voting in the small-time elections, because they're taking over politics even at the small level. So we need to address it from every angle just like they are.
Definitely. I mean, even from, you know, small towns and cities, you know, all the way up to statewide, you know, so it's definitely, and that's one of the big issues that's going on in California, is that there's quite a few counties and cities now who are basically like, oh, cool, we don't have to issue any licenses at all, you know, so, you know, there goes, you know, an entire county or city, you know, where all of a sudden they're like, no, you can't have it here. And then,
okay, so is,
you know,
that the major qualm there, is that there's going to be people that have been doing it for a long, long time that are going to be boxed out because counties are going to say no more?
Well, that's one part of it. Counties are going to be able to say no more. And the fact that there's literally 20 state agencies that at any time could come and inspect your farm or your property.
Right.
So having a license,
Well, I was just going to say, I cannot stand that part. I was actually out at Adam Dunn's farm, and he had talked about how they came down there, counted his plants. Every grower that I know, they've had some agency has came in and wanted to count their plants, like that was even a factor. You know, it's like what their concern should be is like, can we weigh your dry flowers or whatever? You know what I mean? It's just such silly,
exactly,
backwards nonsense that in too many growers, I think, are like, I've heard the comment, I'm proud to be licensed and have the cops come in and count. It's like, I don't know who you are. I don't know who anybody that wants to be helping people and have to be subject to intensified, you know, interrogation by agencies. And you're basically paying. I don't know how it is in New Mexico, but here, you know, you're basically paying for these agencies to investigate you and enforce laws and restrictions on you.
Right. Our taxes are paying their salary to come out and harass us. Taxation is a big thing. They're adding in lots of absurd taxes as well. So.
Right,
even down
to the community level, probably in California, there'll probably be some counties that will allow it, but they'll want their $1,000, $2,000 licensing fee or whatever absorbent amount it is.
Yeah. like here, you know, our personal production license is really cheap, and you know, the authorities here are very easy to work with and stuff. You know, they don't really hassle you at all, you know, and it's, you know, trying to keep it that way for sure. But
right.
But as far as if you want to be a producer for a dispensary, open a dispensary, I think they raise it up to like $90,000 or something like that for the non-refundable application process.
Oh, wow. So that is.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. So, you know, it's one of the tough things here with our law. You know, we have lots of good laws. We have 21 qualifying conditions. You know, we have on-site doctors at the dispensaries and stuff like that. So, you know, who don't get compensated. You know, the dispensaries don't get compensated. You know, the doctor charges, and it's theirs, like an office, basically. So, you know, there's good things and bad things, but everything here is 501c3, which can be good and bad because the taxes are very heavy on that, you know. So a lot of people don't realize that, you know, if you own your own grow and your own dispensary, you have so many employees, you know, obviously your electric bill, the cost of extraction equipment, the cost of, you know, just running a business in general, you know, on top of the fees, it gets a little bit steep, you know, so I'd be afraid of that.
As far as the personal production aspect of it, is there any threat of that being taken away from you, or is that built into your constitution as it is in here in Colorado?
Yeah, we actually do ours is based on Lynn and Aaron Davis Compassionate Care Act, and really was a very well written, you know, draft from the very beginning, you know. So basically, we actually have, aside from, you know, the licensed producers kind of taking a big hit, we as patients have actually had progressive reform done. You know, we've had our plant count upped. We've had, you know, we've had a lot of things, you know, that have been, we've had, since we're such a huge state like Colorado, there's so many people who live in rural areas with no dispensary access. Is that, you know, we allowed for a doctor to write off to be able to get 12 ounces every 3 months, you know, so that you don't have to worry about driving. And, you know,
oh,
so
yeah, that's beautiful.
There's some good things that have been happening. It's one of the nice things about the system here is we don't deal with the legislator. We deal with DLH. So,
well, I'm sorry, what's the DLH?
Yeah, everything is,
what is
done
that?
Through DOH. Department of Health,
they're
the ones who the program is run under, you know, so, you know, it's more just, and we get to all meet together, it's patients, it's growers, it's dispensary owners all in the same room, kind of hashing out, you know, what we expect for the year and, you know, see what we get, and usually it's pretty good, so.
Interesting, because that was going to be my next question. I was going to ask you, how do you think you've been so successful in having such good patient rights there. So you're saying that you don't have to go through the legislator at all. It just is all through the Department of Health, and every year they kind of like have a review?
Yeah, and of course, you know, the state has to, you know, it can't be anything, you know, sort of, you know, we don't try to push, you know, things too hard to where a legislator would have to get involved, you know,
right.
Try to make, you know, small progresses at a time. But because we basically send out a vote for people, you know, people can vote on a law, and once they vote on a law, a county, a city, or the state can, you know, can actually send it to the polls and have voters vote for it.
Interesting. That's sounds like it would be advantageous for everywhere.
Like I said, there's its flaws, but pretty happy with it so far. I've been happy with the quality of, you know, the products here. It's been, you know, pretty top notch and stuff. So it's a good thing.
And were you in New Mexico prior to medical cannabis?
During that time, the year it was legalized, I had lived that previous 7 years in Knoxville, Tennessee. So,
oh, okay.
You know, so So basically after that, it was more just attending the meetings. And then, you know, I went 2 years where I was pretty much in the hospital every other day. You know, so once I got out and I started getting better and, you know, using proper cannabis and stuff, then started attending meetings and just kind of doing things on the local level. You know, I like to go to the local seminars and things like that. It's fun. It's more community-based.
Right, yeah, that's the best way to affect change for sure, yourself and your community for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, out there, I think we also wanted to touch on maybe some grow tips for to kind of get around some of these restrictions that we've been discussing for the last few minutes as far as plant counts, and a lot of places
mm-hmm.
now are even doing size restrictions and such.
Right.
What advice can you give? Because it sounds like you kind of deal with that a little bit more.
Well, basically, I would say since you know, I'm just a personal producer, we actually have almost the very same plant count that a personal producer would in Colorado, is that because we can only flower 4 here and you can only flower 6 there. So the way I got started out, and I would suggest this to just about everybody, is to you want to when you have your 16 plants, you know, you have, you know, and you get them to the right size for flowering and stuff, pull your first 4 or your, or in Colorado, your first 6 that you're looking for, and flower them a little bit early and a little bit smaller so that you don't have to wait so much time. And while they're flowering, you're looking at 60 to, you know, 65 days on average, you know, maybe a little longer for a sativa or CBD. But during that time when you're trying to just turn over, you know, get a little bit of headway on you, it allows you the time while those are flowering to train your plants so that you can maximize your next 6 that you're going to put into flowering your next 6. And as it goes on, by the time you get to your last 6 on the cycle, you've had plenty of time to veg grow them, you know, and you're going to end up with bigger and more consistent yields by then. So you can start small, start quick, you know, get used to growing, you know, using a small plant. That way, you know, something happens at the end to your grow room, your electricity goes out, you know, bugs happen, things like that. You know, you can sort of decrease the amount of time that your cannabis is exposed to those issues. So, and then also having a plant that's properly vegged and properly super cropped. Like, I like to super crop by doing the bending technique, where you literally break the inside of the plant while keeping the outside layer of each budding branch. I bend that at a certain point, and I bend them all at the same level so that I wind up with an even canopy. And that seems to work really well. So you have smaller buds. You don't have the big long ones, but you can have multiple 12 up to 24, even more tops by doing it that way. So that's my biggest grow tip, you know, before people really get into scrogging and stuff too much, is start simple, you know, maybe top it once and then let those go and let them ripen quick. And in the meantime, focus on training your veg plants to get more consistent yields.
In your super cropping, do you do the bending in veg, or are you talking about like first week, second week of flower?
I actually do it in the second week of flower, which some people say is a big no-no, but I always experience a big, after 2 days, it takes about 2 days for that branch to heal, to kind
mm-hmm.
of form a knuckle, and then I always see a huge explosion of bud growth on top, above that bed node. So,
agree, yep. That's, I do a lot of cutting in veg, and then once it goes in the flower, I'll do the bending technique myself, and I've
exactly.
never seen any ill
yeah.
effects.
Right, and the good thing is, you already can tell by how many nodes are where you bend the approximate size of your finished flower will be. So it helps to train the other branches to hit that same wavelength of light. So you don't wind up with really potent top buds and then really weak lower buds.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I just did it last night to even out my canopy was the main reason I did it. And those are some great tips. That's a brilliant idea. I like how you suggested to, you know, get your six kind of vegged out, maybe put them into some smaller pots even, and just get your green thumb going and learn mistakes on some plants that might not be as much time invested into them. I think that's a great idea. Because it's funny, I was going to go almost the opposite way with that with my grow advice as far as under the constrictions, which you pointed out, it's going to take a while to veg your plants to a proper size. You know, that's what you're really going to want to go for. What you're saying is working towards, you know, a 6 to 8 week veg time. Maybe, you know, I don't know, four to six plants underneath one light. And then I would recommend after you've kind of seen how plants grow and everything like that to look into a scrog technique. That's how I started growing, and I'm about to go back to it. It's just there's a lot of advantages, I feel, to scrogging, and the number one is increase in yield. You get a lot more exposure to all those lower nodes, branch out, spread out, as I'm sure you know.
One of these days I'll have room to do that, because that ideally I would like that.
You'd like to be able to scrog?
To scrog, yeah.
Right. And what prevents you from being able to do that?
Oh, just the size of my grow room and, you know, having to run at basically two because, you know, my flowering room isn't very big since it's only four plants. So, you know.
Gotcha. And what size of pots do you use? Because that was going to be my other thing, and seeing if you agree with, you know, the tried and true correlation between, you know, your roots are going to equal what your buds are. So the more roots and more healthy your root system is, the healthier and more abundant your buds are going to be. So I would like recommend, you know, under a 4 to 6 pot position, you know, 20 gallon pots at least, or if you're going to have like one per light, like upwards of like a 40 gallon pot. What are you using?
Right. Well, because I flower a little bit earlier, I used mostly 10s, but what was interesting was the first four that I put into flower, I found they had a deal with these new, they were called Air Pots, or Awesome Pots, at the grow store, and they're just like your standard smart pot, like a fabric pot, but they were square-shaped, and they had holes to be able to put, like, bamboo and stuff in that didn't go in your soil, that actually went on the outside of the pots. And they drained super fast. So, you know, they do use a little bit of water, but I was able to get 3 ounces on 3 of the plants and like 4.5 on one on a 1 gallon pot. So that was
pretty
cool.
Wow, that's amazing.
So I would love to see what it would do with they make them all the way up to 200 gallon size of that same kind. So I definitely would stock up on those. Because I think you could probably get a pretty good yield with a 5 or 10 if space is a big constriction for you. But otherwise, bigger is better.
Yeah, I actually had just been given some of those, I think, two, like, 5, maybe 10 gallon awesome pots, and I'm looking forward to using them. I love that feature that you mentioned where the stakes are on the outside.
Yeah, it's a pretty good little system.
And it, like, closes on the top to prevent moisture from coming out as well, right?
Yeah, so, and that's kind of neat because you can control how quick you want your soil to drain.
That save your butt if you want to go out of town for the weekend. You can seal them up and not have to worry about
watering.
I seal
them up. Exactly, yeah, and then I let them, and then I just open them up, and you let them breathe, and I'll see a good, like, spurt of growth of either veg or bud after you kind of let those roots sort of breathe after sitting there for you know, no more than a couple days do I keep them tight, but, you know, it's kind of neat to see, you know, the ability to hold water and then the ability to sort of loosen it out, because by then, you know, I like to get my plants fairly dry before I water them again. Overwatering is pretty much every new grower makes that mistake, you know, it's it's just kind of the way it goes, you know. It's like, oh, the soil is dry on top, throw some water in there. So
right,
you know,
plant full of water, right?
Yeah, but it's letting it dry out, and I use a very, very, very fluffy mix, is that they dry out, you know, relatively quick, but they respond to their next watering or their next feeding so much because there's plenty of room for the root hairs to absorb all that. They're not all sort of gunked up together, you know, in waterlogged, basically.
Oh, yeah, I completely agree. I like to have my plants dry out a little bit. One time I made a batch of super soil with a little bit too much green sand, and that holds something like 10 times its weight in moisture, and it would never dry out. Like, the plant literally, like, it was impossible to let it dry out. Like, it just killed, like, two or three plants that I transplanted it into. So, for sure, water can kill your plant, and it can make it thrive. I think we do have a call here on the line,
so
I'm going to go ahead and pick up the Strain Talk Millennium Grown Broadcast Network phone line and see what the caller has to say. Hi, thank you for calling Strain Talk. This is Nick McCombs, your co-host with Mike Morse. How can I help you today?
I had a question. You guys were talking about scrogging. What is scrogging?
Oh, okay, yeah, that's great. Thanks for helping us remember that we use a little bit of jargon sometimes.
Okay.
Scrogging is simply an acronym for screen of green. You might be familiar with the term trellis. Many people will have, like, grapes or other viney fruits and vegetables grow up a trellis to maximize space. Scrogging is a vertical trellis that you set up over the canopy of your plant. And instead of the plants traditionally growing straight up and down, you kind of weave them through a couple layers of this trellis netting, allowing more sun or light, in most cases, to reach deeper down onto the plant. Does that explain that for you? Yeah? Okay,
yes,
great.
Yes, that helps a lot. That helps a lot. The other question that I had was... when I went into a dispensary and you look at the different cannabis buds, some of them are naturally like a purple color. And so when I asked one of the bud tenders, they told me that that meant that it was actually moldy. Can you tell me if that's true and what's going on with that?
Oh, yeah, that definitely doesn't sound accurate. Let me kick that over to Mike. I think he can tell you a little bit more in technical terms what's going on with your purple weed.
Yes. What causes the purple coloration in cannabis is actually a very important antioxidant and anti-inflammatory. It's anthocyanins. Anthocyanins are what makes berries purple. They're what makes strawberries red. So basically, any sort of red or purple expression on a plant is simply the presence of anthocyanins and or other flavonoids also, but anthocyanins are mainly the purple and reds. And what's great about those is they're very anti-inflammatory, very antioxidative, and they can be pretty much every plant has it in there in a certain amount. Sometimes you can get the plant cold to make them to sort of express the purple a little more, but sometimes you have natural purple phenos that will pretty much turn purple on you throughout any sort of growing environment or growing temperature. But it's actually fine. I actually prefer purple and red colorations on my cannabis because of the anti-inflammatory effect of them. So it's actually a good thing.
Very good to know.
I had a question on that, Mike. Does the plants that are produce the coloration due to cold stress, does that have that same anti-inflammatory property, or is that a different expression?
No, actually, it's the same. It's not a bad technique to use. And what it is that it's cannabis being exposed to stress. You know, whether it's, you know, usually in this case with anthos, the cold stress of it. So it's actually already in the DNA of the plant. So all you're doing is bringing it forward.
Beautiful. Yeah, I have a lot of plants that will show it in the wintertime growing times, but in the summer they do not want to show their purple.
No, no. The only I found, you know, I found some of the great phenos, and then you know, some of the Thai purple, purple Thai that I use for my juicy fruit strain. You know, I flowered that. It was like over 90 that week, and they still turn bright purple. So.
Oh wow, beautiful. And
yeah,
Colin,
was
there
surprised.
Any other questions that you had?
No, that was it. Thank you guys so much.
No,
yeah,
problem. Thank you for calling Strain Talk. All right, Mike. Well, we only have we have about 20 minutes here left on the show. I wanted to maybe touch on a little bit of the new technologies in the grow industry. I think I mentioned last time how I had transferred over to the LEC 315 Philips technology lights. And even in that, since our last discussion, I can see just how much the plants seem to love the natural spectrum. My eyes seem to love that natural spectrum. The photography opportunities are a lot better. I don't know if you've experienced in the past trying to take some nug shots of your plants under, I assume you use HPS, is that right, or do you use something else?
I actually do HPS and LED.
And do you ever experience like kind of the flicker effect when you want to take a picture?
Oh yes, yes. I have to wear photochromic lenses in the grow room because of that.
Oh, because of the effect on your eyes?
Yeah, yeah. You know how the sodium bulbs sort of fluctuate, they kinda go, you know, you can't see it when you're looking in the grow room, but you snap a picture and you're like, oh my goodness, what the heck is that?
Yeah, yeah, that's crazy because that's what I was in my grow last night and was taking a couple pictures and had noticed that phenomenon for the first time where it was a steady thing and I kind of, you know, it feels a little nicer on my eyes. And my fiance even mentioned how it's probably better for us not to have such high intensity electromagnetic, you know, ballast blowing through our house. But I definitely keep you posted as far as, you know, the final outcome and the weight and everything. But everything I'm hearing is you should be able to get a pound per light. And
love
the spectrum and the ecological impact that it has where I don't have to have as much cooling in my grow room and the bulbs last up to 2 years. So that's just something that I like to try and push out there for all the new growers. I know you had said you also use LEDs. Is that right?
Yes, yes. It's I have what I have. I haven't been able to afford, you know, much new in the way of lights and stuff like that. But,
right.
You know, but I've been looking into the LEPs and LECs and stuff, and they look really great. You know, I've seen some, you know, even CMH, but I think CMH is a little more expensive to run, so.
Right. The LED system that you have, is that just a supplemental light to increase your profiles?
It's literally just a supplemental. What I do is I hang them vertically side of the grow. I have 275 watts that are on each side of my grow, and they kind of help illuminate the bottom nodes of the plant. And then the HPS over the top, you know, to kind of give it that really strong, you know, strong effect.
Beautiful. And are you able to grow year-round out there?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's almost perfect out here is that you don't really need to insulate too heavily. It's always nice. You know, I have a decent layer in there. But the light from my high pressure sodium alone, because I live, you know, pretty high up at, you know, just about the same temperatures as it is in Colorado Springs. So actually helps heat. So what I do is I flower them. So I use the lights at night when it's the coldest, and then it still stays warm enough throughout the day when they're on their dark cycle.
Right, yeah, and you're okay as far as the high heat of the summer? You don't get heat stress or anything?
No, I do. It has to, I have to vent it out pretty good. You know, sometimes
right.
even put in an AC depending on the day.
Yeah, yeah. My last grow room I came from, I wasted a whole summer worth of grow just, you know, to 100 degree days in July last year. So that's
yeah.
just something that even me, I knew it was coming.
Yep.
People got to pay attention to the outdoor seasons because that actually matters for your indoor garden as well.
Yeah, true. Very good point.
Well, we're about closing up here. Was there any other issues that you felt we should touch on today? We have about 10 minutes left.
Really, you know, I think that it's something that, you know, we see quite often and that we've seen for a while, you know, but definitely you touched on the, you know, on the fact that you prefer CBD strain and you specialize in higher CBD strains, but you also acknowledge that CBD only is not the end all be all, you know? So it's definitely something that, you know, that it's really easy to get caught up in that. And I was just reading up on, because I suffer a fair amount of PTSD from what I've gone through medically wise and, you know, other things in life and stuff. It, you know, it's hard sometimes even advising clients because you kind of have to dig deep.
You there? Oh, okay. Sounds like we lost our co-host, Mike Morse. We're going to go ahead and just probably wrap this up here. I'll give you my closing thoughts. Wanted to kind of touch on the outdoor harvest season coming up here. Be sure, if you're not already, if maybe it's your first grow outdoors, you're going to want to keep an eye on those weather reports. You're going to want to keep the moisture off your plants. That way they don't go moldy and such. And you're going to want to watch out for hail and all these late season things that can wreck all your hard summer's work. I think we actually have Mike back on the line. Mike, are you there?
Yeah. Yeah, sorry
okay.
about that.
Not a problem. I'm glad you're able to make it back in.
Yeah.
Do you remember where you were at there when you cut off?
You'll have to refresh me.
You were talking about the importance of not having CBD-only laws.
CBD-only laws, yes. And really, you know, as I try to help people out with multiple conditions and stuff, you know, you really see a lot of correlates between the fact that, you know, everybody who's been through, you know, such, you know, traumatic, you know, usually, you know, the conditions that are on the medical list are usually, you know, fairly traumatic conditions. And I think that, you know, one thing that doesn't get talked about very much.
Oh, bummer. I think he cut out again. But I'm going to go ahead and just kind of continue his thoughts because it's something that I think we're both have similar views on, is that we need to allow the plant to be as free as possible in all her characteristics and cannabinoids, view the plant just as we view people or as we should view people without skin colors or differentiations, and use it as a tool that it is, and recognize that children, adults, different conditions all require different levels of cannabinoids and different cannabinoids. So that's something that me and Mike are definitely going to touch on in the future and making sure that as these other states come online that these CBD-only laws are ignored in favor of full cannabis therapy and also to kind of make sure all these states such as Colorado and Oregon and California that have had medical marijuana, medical cannabis as I like to call it, for, you know, 10, 15 years already, that these patients do not lose the access that they've been accustomed to and that they need. So I do appreciate you listening to Strain Talk here on the Millennium Grown Broadcast Network. We are hashing it out, and no pun intended, and working towards a brighter future here. Thank you for joining us, and please tune in next week, and please shoot us any emails or contact us on our Facebook page if there's any questions that you have or any strains that you'd like us to touch on or explore. Once again, this has been Strain Talk with Nick McCombs and Mike Morris on the Millennium Grown Broadcast Network. Y'all have a great week.